This series of presentations concerning Christian apologetics is offered for the edification of all students of God's Word by spiritandtruth.org. Dr. Paul Hennebury, president of TELUS Biblical Institute, will lead our study. It is our prayer that these presentations will deepen your understanding of the Bible and allow you to draw closer in your relationship with God through His Son, Jesus Christ. Now let's begin our time of study with Dr. Hennebury.
What we're going to do now is that we're going to look into the different schools of apologetics. And I'll just take a few minutes to deal with each one. The first one that we're going to look at is what's usually called the classical approach to apologetics. The classical approach is a very ancient approach and basically uses the resources of what's called natural theology in order to get its arguments across. Now, natural theology is somewhat of a good and somewhat of a bad idea. Basically, it teaches that you can start from human reason. And you can go out there looking at the world, looking at the different things that are in the world, whether those things are physical or non-physical, cognitive or non-cognitive. And you can argue to a God from the position of the knower or the viewer. So what natural theology is doing is that it's starting with mankind as the proximate starting point and arguing to the existence of God from that premise. It's been very popular and very common within Roman Catholic theology, and some of the great proponents of this way of thought have been within the Roman Catholic Church. People like Thomas Aquinas and Anselm, and even many fine thinkers in Roman Catholicism of the last 100 years. G.K. Chesterton, one thinks of Peter Kreft nowadays, and Edward Fesser and people like that, who are well worth reading on this. In the evangelical camp, you have people like William Lane Craig and Norman Geisler and others that basically adopt this classical approach. What they're going to do is that they're going to argue for the existence of God based on these traditional arguments for God. Arguments, for example, from first cause, that there has to be a start or a first cause for whatever comes afterwards, and that first cause has to be adequate for everything else that is caused by it. Another argument for first cause, not really speaking about the temporal aspects, but speaking about the fact that you have to have a cause for everything that exists now and has existed. What upholds everything? That also is an argument for first cause. That's called a cosmological argument. Then you have arguments from design, the most famous one being the argument from Paley about a person strolling along a beach and finding a watch in the beach and realizing that time and erosion and the elements of nature didn't create the intricacies of that watch. It clearly had a designer, and he argued that we can identify design from chance readily just by examination. That was refuted somewhat by people like David Hume and John Stuart Mill and others who said, well, the argument falters because of the kind of universe that Paley envisages that we live in, which is a universe that does have these laws that do these kinds of things. In other words, what Paley was doing is that he was saying that what the unbelieving scientists were saying about the world was essentially correct, and yet we can have this idea of design within it. That's the idea of design. We'll come back to that argument a little later on. Then there are moral arguments. There are common moral precepts that everyone agrees with. It's wrong to push into a line ahead of somebody. It's wrong to steal. It's wrong to commit adultery and so on. C.S. Lewis argued along these lines quite powerfully. And these kinds of arguments all lead the person to say, well, in order for there to be an absolute morality, a standard of morality that we agree with and that we notice and can all appreciate and sign up to, there has to be a moral lawgiver in existence from whom all of these ethical mores derive. The same for design. If there is a designer, then the designer will surely be tracked by the things that he has designed in the world. And if there is a first cause that upholds everything and starts everything off, he ought to be identifiable within the world that he's made. So that's the classical school. I don't hold to that school, and I'll tell you why in another segment, but it is one of the most popular ways of approaching Christian apologetics. What's my main reason for denying it? Well, it's because in the Bible we're not arguing to a God. We're arguing to the God. Furthermore, the Bible is a revelation from God to man. It's not that man is left alone to figure out whether there's a God or not. God has revealed himself. He's revealed himself in his word. He's revealed himself in his world and in us. And therefore we know his existence, according to Romans chapter 1. In order to do classical apologetics, you have to more or less deny those three premises.